Counsel, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Ron Oldenburg for the petitioner, Your Honor. We pretty much set forth our position in our briefs as indicated therein. It is our position that the conviction of the petitioner does not constitute a conviction for removable offense because the conviction document, as opposed to sentencing documents, does not specify the subparagraph of the Hawaii state statute of which the individual was convicted.
What do we do with the Hawaii Supreme Court decision? I mean, that is the last document. The Hawaii Supreme Court cites the section. Isn't that the end of it?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the Hawaii Supreme Court, the issue was not raised before at all as to which paragraph the person was convicted. In fact, the Hawaii Supreme Court mentions that there were two conflicting findings of guilty. We only have one in this file. What the other one mentioned by the Hawaii Supreme Court is, we have no idea, Your Honor.
But isn't the remedy, if you want to amend the judgment to include the what you interview is the correct statute, your remedy in state court initially?
I
understand your position. You've got a pretty good argument based on the jury verdict form. I understand that. But then it goes up on appeal, and I gather your position is, well, they were just writing down numbers, and nobody really thought about the issue or litigated it. But still, at the end of the day, we've got a judgment, a conviction, and we have an affirmation under that statute by the Hawaii Supreme Court. I mean, whether or not the issue is raised or not, shouldn't have been.
It should have been, but, Your Honor, the issue really wasn't pertinent for the state Supreme Court. Regardless of which subparagraph the defendant was convicted of, the sentence under the Hawaii state law would be the same. It's a Class C felony, and the sentencing document, which was issued later, would probably be the same regardless of which subparagraph. The issue doesn't even come up until six years later when the Immigration Service brings action against the individual saying, hey, you're deportable because you were convicted under this paragraph. So it wasn't an issue at the time of conviction or even as late as 2003 when the Hawaii Supreme Court considered the appeal.
Are you saying that there was some sort of an error in the record of judgment and conviction that was carried through the process? Is that it?
Basically, yes, Your Honor.
What's in the record that indicate that?
Well, the sentencing document is basically, well, let me back up. The NTA, the notice to appear in this case, is based on a conviction of October 18, 1999. We only have one document in the file that is dated October 18, 1999, and that does not specify the subparagraph.
No, I understand. That's the general verdict form.
Yes.
Well, the judge was there, we assume, and the judge entered the official record of judgment and conviction, I assume.
He did.
And so where does he just comes out of the air and flips the number?
That we don't know, Your Honor.
So we don't know from the record how that happened.
No, we don't know from the record.
But the Supreme Court reviewed the record, as Hawaii reviewed the record, came up with the same answer.
Yes, it did. But where it got that determination, did it get it from the judgment of the trial judge, which he does specify that subparagraph? Is there another document in existence somewhere that is not part of this record that contains that? I don't know. But the only document that is on the record does not indicate that the petitioner was convicted.
So why should we use the jury verdict?
Because that's the verdict that convicted him. That's the only document dated October 18, 1999. And that's pretty much our position, Your Honor. I would note that in our reply brief, we mentioned the very recent Third Circuit case, Evanson, which we think strongly supports our position. Thank you.
Good
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, John Blakely on behalf of the respondent, Attorney General of the United States. Your Honors, this case is about a 39-year-old man who sexually abused a young girl who is at most 13 years old. We can't lose sight of that fact, and we can't lose sight of the fact that Congress, when it amended the INA.
Well, we can only keep sight of what he was convicted of.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And none of those documents indicate what age the victim is. The documents we're considering do not show what age the victim is.
Just that she's less than 14, Your Honor.
What document shows that?
The conviction for which the specific statute under which he was convicted requires that the victim be under 14 years of age. And we have three different documents that say that he's convicted under that statute.
Well, what do we make of the Hawaii Supreme Court's language in saying that the jury returned two verdict forms that were contradictory to the court's instructions and apparently returned a verdict of not guilty of the charged offense, but said it was a lesser included offense? What do we make of that?
Well, there was an error first, and that's why the trial judge sent it back and had the correction made. And when the correction came back, it said that they were convicted for the lesser offense. And then the judgment of conviction was issued, and that showed that he was convicted under the under 1B here. And then the Supreme Court summary disposition lists the same provision.
Well, it does cite the statute, as I mentioned when I was talking to your colleague. But there's some implication, even in the opinion, that the verdict form was ultimately a little ambiguous about what the conviction was. And it goes off and then says harmless error, but which is fine for that purpose, for the Hawaii Supreme Court. For our purpose, determining what the statute was, it's a little bit different matter.
Well, I'm not sure that anyone reached the conclusion that there was harmless error. This issue hasn't been raised before the courts of Hawaii. And what essentially petitioner is engaged in right now is a collateral attack on the conviction. And that's not what the issue is before us today. The statute, the INA lists specifically.
I don't think he's collaterally attacking the conviction. He just said I was convicted of something else.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, but it's a collateral attack on the conviction documents. And the INA lists specifically what can be used in immigration courts for conviction documents. And three of those documents here identify a statute that falls under the definition of sexual abuse of a minor.
And I'm with you so far, but when you first started out, you indicated that the victim was under 13 and that that's what she was charged for. If we could get to the indictment, this is an easy case. And when I was reviewing this case, I was having a problem because there's no question what the indictment says. But the indictments is not one of the documents that we can consider. I mean, it follows automatically if you have the indictment in front of you. So you're just saying we should pick the other three documents versus the jury verdict?
Well, the jury verdict is only one document. We've got two other documents.
But it's the document of conviction.
It's actually the trial court issues the judgment of conviction here.
Trial court doesn't convict, the jury does.
That's true.
And we don't know what they considered.
That's correct, Your Honor. We don't know exactly what
they... It's a general verdict.
It is a general verdict, Your Honor. And here the INA allows the immigration court to use the judgment of conviction as entered by the trial court judge and also allows a summary disposition from the Hawaiian Supreme Court. And both of those things indicate that he was convicted for under a statute that qualifies as sexual abuse of a minor.
Well, in our review, what do we do with the conflict between the official record of plea and verdict and sentence and the record of judgment? What do we do with that conflict?
Well, this is a factual dispute. And under the INA, a factual dispute is resolved by compelling evidence. A petitioner has to present record evidence that compels the conclusion that the immigration judge erred. And here, there is no compelling evidence when you have a trial court judgment of conviction and you have a state Supreme Court judgment, summary disposition, rather, that both indicate that he was convicted for sexual abuse of a minor.
Doesn't that invert the burden of proof here? I mean, the government is obligated to prove by clear and convincing evidence that of the crime, qualifying crime exists, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And here the immigration judge found by clear and convincing evidence that he was convicted under the statute.
I think you just said it was their burden to show that a different result was compelled. Actually, you can see that the burden is on the government in the first instance, and it's a high burden, clear and convincing, right? Okay.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, this leads me, I guess, into a second concern I have about this case, which is the BIA reviewed the IJ's decision under a clearly erroneous standard. That doesn't seem to me to be correct. Under our case law, under Taylor, of the United States Supreme Court, anytime we have judicially noticeable documents for applying the law, it's a legal conclusion, not a factual conclusion. And legal conclusions are reviewed de novo, not only by us, but under the regulations of DHS.
Your Honor, I'd have to look again to see exactly what the board said there. But I think what the immigration judge reached a factual determination. The Homeland Security was required to find, to establish by clear and convincing evidence that he had been convicted of the crime.
Right, but let me read this to you. I know you don't probably have it in front of me. Let me read this to you, and I don't mean to interrupt, but it may get us faster to the issue. I'm interested in. The immigration judge's determination that the respondent was convicted under the qualifying statute is a finding of fact that we review for clear error. Now, then it goes down and says, basically sustains it under the standard of review. But I don't think that's the way analytically they ought to approach it. We review de novo because the facts are undisputed. I mean, you only use judicially noticeable documents. There's no factual dispute.
Well, here there was a factual dispute.
No, the documents are the documents. There's no doubt about what the documents are. The question is, by application of law, what do the documents mean? So that to me, I mean, we would, if we were dealing with a criminal offense, predicate offense in the habeas context or under the criminal code, we'd be engaging in de novo review. And we, at least as far as I'm concerned, we would be engaging in de novo review of the result here based on the judicially noticeable documents. So
yes, Your Honor, but
I guess the conclusion I'm getting to, and I want your comment on, is it seems to me that the BIA erred in its analysis and applied the wrong standard of review. So, long speech, now it's your turn.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, here there is a factual dispute over whether or not he was convicted under a given statute. And the immigration judge resolved that as a factual dispute, and then the board properly reviewed that under the clearly erroneous standard.
But we would never do that. For example, those kind of issues, we would always review de novo. I mean, because the documents are uncontroverted. They have to be uncontroverted in order to be subject to judicial notice. So maybe it's not an issue the board has considered, but it seems to me they got it wrong. Now, it may not make any difference in this case, but I think they have the standard review wrong.
I understand, Your Honor. I'd be happy to provide supplemental briefing on the issue. I hadn't had a chance to look into the case law and provide that.
Okay.
I have nothing else to
add. I'm not sure the government's there. Are you through?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. And
if you go all this way, you've got to get a few more.
There's only one other issue that I'd like to address. And last Friday, I sent supplemental authority to this court, reminding the court of its decisions in Estrada Espinoza and Kawashima, and then also about the Supreme Court granting cert in Nijuan, a Third Circuit case addressing basically the same issues in Kawashima. And I think given the dramatic impact that those cases could have on the ultimate determination in this case, I'd ask that this court allow supplemental briefing on those issues, or at a minimum, hold this case until those issues are resolved. The government has filed a petition for rehearing en banc in Kawashima. The government has also sought and obtained an extension for the deadline for filing a cert petition in Estrada Espinoza. And so, with as many of those decisions up in the air as they are right now, I respectfully ask this.
Well, very quickly, what's the significance of those cases? Very frankly, I haven't had a chance to review them. We got those late. So, what's the significance of those cases to this case?
Well, Your Honor, under applying Estrada Espinoza, there's a potential impact if this court finds that the that this specific statute is not categorically sexual abuse of a minor. And if it's not categorically a sexual crime for sexual abuse of a minor, then the next question becomes whether you apply the modified categorical approach. And as you start to apply the modified categorical approach, whether or not there are missing elements.
That's not the issue in our case. Our issue in the case is what section was it? You're just assuming that it's a 1B. Or what is it?
The problem with 1B, I think, what the counsel's indicating, is it doesn't necessarily have as an element the age difference, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, that's why it wouldn't categorically qualify. So you have to go to the modified categorical approach, which the IJ seemed to anyway. Here, the only deficit, it seems to me, in the proof is, although we know from the immigration record his age, it's not contained in the state statute of conviction or the documents of conviction, right?
Other than to the extent that it establishes that he was convicted under 1B, and 1B requires that the age be under 14.
No, I'm talking about his age.
His age. That's correct.
I mean, we know what it is because of the immigration records, but it's not contained in the state court records. That's the potential issue.
You're correct, Your Honor. And just if I could point out one thing, though, that you suggested that the immigration judge took the modified categorical approach here. And I wouldn't characterize it that way because there was no need to have reached the modified categorical approach because it was categorically a sexual abuse of a minor. Rather, the reason they looked to the same documents that he would have if he had reached the modified categorical approach was merely to establish the burden of proof.
Fair comment.
And so I notice my time's up with I respectfully request that this court allow supplemental briefing or at least hold the case, pending the decisions in those other cases.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We have nothing further. All right. We'll defer submission till further order of the court, and we'll consider your request then that we hold it pending the resolution of all the pending Supreme Court and Ninth Circuit cases, and we'll issue a further order later. Thank you.
Thank you,
counsel.